Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Soccer. St. Louis has had a long love affair with that game, and the bond may soon become even stronger if Major League Soccer decides the city's right for an MLS expansion team. It's the latest chapter in St. Louis soccer history, and we're taking a look at that history on today's program. Joining me in studio is Dave Lang, the author of Soccer Made in St. Louis, A History of the Game and America's First Soccer Capital. Dave, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Don.
I must admit, I was a little surprised to see in your title that we were America's first soccer capital. How so?
Yes. For many decades up until the mid-80s, we were the only city in the United States that really was producing generation after generation of native-born players, St. Louis-born players. In other cities, usually it was first-generation immigrants who were playing the game. And then their children grew up, they played baseball, football, because they wanted to be Americans, mm-hmm. you know, so.
And it's pretty much stayed that way, it seems to me.
It's since about the mid-80s, soccer's picked up in a lot of cities. A lot of kids play the game nationwide, and it's become extremely popular as a participation sport. And in the last 10, 15 years, it's really been catching on as a spectator sport.
Yeah, I don't know any kids that haven't played soccer, but including my own. But it seems that that's kind of where it stops. Once they get 8th, 9th grade, for the most part, they're off doing other things. Why hasn't soccer caught on in this country the way it has the rest of the world?
Well, first of all, there are other sports here, sports opportunities that you don't have in other countries. Baseball, I mean, mm-hmm. what other country besides Japan has a professional league? American football, no one does. And that's where the money is. I mean, if you're a talented athlete who can play any sport, you're probably going to go where the money is. So you're going to go play baseball, football, basketball. That's changing now as soccer becomes more popular and athletes who play soccer are making more money and getting more opportunities.
You know, it's my observation, it's totally my own opinion, that probably the Women's World Cup soccer team has done more for soccer in this country than any men's group that I can think of.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the United States is a big event country as far as sports go. People love big events. And when you have a team representing the United States that wins the world championship, naturally they're going to get all kinds of attention and people watching them. And since they've won it three times, most recently this past summer, with two St. Louis women on the team, by the way, it creates all kinds of interest.
What about your own interest? Are you a player, a former player, or how did you get into it?
When I was growing up, high school soccer was really kind of still in its infancy. I went to Vianney and Kirkwood, and when I went there, they didn't have a soccer team until I was a junior, so I played football there. But I went to SIU Edwardsville, and I went there at a time when they were one of the top three or four teams in the nation, along with St. Louis University. Quincy, which is not too far from here, a lot of St. Louis players. UMSL was a national power. I worked in sports information while I was a student at SIU, and in those days, as I mentioned, their soccer program was top flight. So I got to know a lot of those players. And from there, when I went to after I graduated, I worked at the Globe Democrat in sports, and I became the soccer writer there after I'd been there a couple of years.
You mentioned Quincy. Didn't Mayor Slay play soccer?
Yes, he did. Mayor Slay played for Jack McKenzie, who a St. Louis guy who coached at Quincy for many years, and they won a bunch of national championships.
Soccer has a very strong heartbeat in this area, I would think it beats most strongly in the Catholic schools. Why is that?
In the late 1800s, when St. Louis was really changing, expanding, exploding in terms of population, a big part of that population, almost 40,000, were immigrants from the United Kingdom. They brought soccer with them. At that time, CVC High School was Christian Brothers College, an actual college. The brothers who taught there brought soccer with them because they were from the United Kingdom. And from there, they brought it into the grade schools, and it became a grassroots sport right from the end of the 18th century up to now.
And of course, we have a very large Bosnian community here and other groups of immigrants as well. But the Bosnians have had some influence, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. St. Louis is where the largest concentration of Bosnians live outside of Bosnia itself. and their soccer. That's a soccer culture. In fact, one of the Bosnians who emigrated here, Vedad Abisevic, when he was a teenager, he plays for the Bosnian national team, and he plays professional soccer in Germany. So they're a very tight-knit soccer culture.
Do you think St. Louis could support a professional soccer team?
I think absolutely. We've shown that in the last few years when they brought in some what are called international friendlies. Chelsea played Manchester City at Busch Stadium. They sold it out in 20 minutes. I think there have been five or six international friendlies here in the last 3 years, and the attendance has averaged right around 35,000. Last November, the U.S. national team played a World Cup qualifier here, and they drew 43,000 for that game.
Well, Major League Soccer is taking a look at St. Louis, as you well know. It's a hot issue right now following the departure of the Rams. What do you make of that effort and the potential for a franchise here?
They've wanted to be here for a long time because if you look at the map and just see where their teams are, there's a big hole right in the middle. You have a team in Chicago and a team in Kansas City, and they would love to have a team in St. Louis to create two natural rivalries. Kansas City is the team there is kind of out by itself. They're not really close to another Major League Soccer team, and they would love to have that rivalry. Right after the announcement of the Rams leaving, Sports Illustrated polled some of the Major League Soccer coaches, and they all said St. Louis is the place where we've got to get our next team in there.
However, it comes at a price.
Yes. You're talking about they want a soccer-specific stadium. They don't want to play in the Edward Jones Dome. The league is averaging 21,000 people a game, but when you're in a almost 60,000-seat facility, it looks empty.
Well, I'm also told Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen, was here a week or two ago, and he says it's the field is not wide enough, and the building cannot sustain the width that would be necessary.
You would have to go almost up to the stands. I mean, Real Madrid played there a couple of years ago, and they literally moved the sidelines very close to the stands because in soccer, they want at least about a 70, 75-yard wide field, and that's really cutting it close in the Edward Jones Dome.
Well, the comments that I've heard have indicated that there would be some interest in building a stadium down on the riverfront, a la what the Rams were talking about. How much money are we talking about?
You could probably get a stadium built for $100 million, but it's not going to be a state-of-the-art type stadium, which they have in Kansas City, which is sort of the measuring stick for soccer-specific stadiums. That was a $200 million facility, and it only seats about 19,000. If you want to do it right, I think you'd want to make sure you had room to add more seats eventually as the sport grows. So I would say $200 million is probably what you're looking at as a cost to build a stadium.
So if we started with an outdated stadium, we'd be in the same box perhaps that we found ourselves in with the Rams.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'd want a stadium that's state-of-the-art, that has room to add 5,000-10,000 seats so you can up the capacity to 30,000 if you needed to. They want to be downtown. They've said that many times. Wherever they want to put a team, they love to be in the downtown area, so that's where they want to go.
I wonder if there's a public appetite, however, for funding a stadium. If public money had to go into it, I mean, we've been through this a couple of times recently, and it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah, that's the big question. You know, where's the funding going to come from? And, you know, they would like, obviously, to have some sort of public funding to help at least fun part of the stadium. That's going to be
of course they
issue.
Would.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, of course they would. Well, we can backtrack a little bit on soccer history here, but let's start in the more immediate, a recent past. We talk about the potential for a new soccer team coming into St. Louis, but correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to me that we've tried this before and it just hasn't worked. We tried indoor soccer, outdoor soccer, various leagues have come and gone, and it just hasn't taken here.
Well, that's true, but it's true of almost every city in the United States. Over the last 30, 35 years, they've had several soccer teams. I mean, New York City, Chicago, you name it, they've had professional teams that have come and gone. The difference now is sport is on television from live television from England every Saturday morning, live television from Germany on Saturday morning. The audience numbers are very impressive for those games. NBC jumped on them. They show the English Premier League games on NBC Sports Network and sometimes on NBC itself. If you turn on the TV at noon, you're likely to see a game from the English Premier League live on NBC.
Well, if it hasn't worked in the past, even though there seems to be interest now in foreign teams, if you will, I wonder how much stake we can put into the prospect for its succeeding now.
Well, here's how failure has turned into success. When those teams failed 30 years ago, when those teams were there, those players started training kids to play. They planted the seeds for soccer, especially in places like Dallas and Seattle and Portland. And soccer really germinated from those failed teams. They created an interest in kids who started playing. Those kids are now adults with kids who play. They grew up playing soccer. And I think that's been a huge factor in creating this increasing interest in soccer in the United States mm-hmm. as a professional sport. They've averaged 21,000 last year. For the last 5 years, they've had a higher average attendance than the NBA, the NHL, and well, those two sports. So they're higher than those two sports. I mean, they play about half as many games, but I think it's significant that they're building a solid base of people who go to the games.
You say that money is the name of the game in all games. Is 21,000 enough to an average of 21,000 enough to sustain a team?
Well, Major League Soccer is a very different enterprise. It's a single entity setup, which means you don't actually own a team. You own a piece of the league. The league controls salaries and player movement, so a lot of the expenses are all built into the league. They have a marketing agreement where they own the rights to a lot of soccer in the United States for the U.S. national team games, Mexican national team games. They bring in all that money from licensing. So it's a sport where it's a lot like the NFL where the owners share in the profits and the losses.
Sounds like a co-op to
yes,
me.
Yes, exactly.
It's very much like
exactly
that.
Exactly what it is.
We have to take a break, and we'll do that now. I'm talking with Dave Lang, who is the author of Soccer Made in St. Louis, A History of the Game in America's First Soccer Capital, that being St. Louis. I should point out, by the way, that Dave Lang will be participating in a TEDx Gateway Arch event on Thursday, February 18th, one of several panels discussing soccer that will be held at Washington University. We have a link to all of that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to learn more about it, go there, and you can find out all you need to know. We'll come back with Dave Lang and talk more about soccer. We'll have some time for phone calls, too, if you'd like to get into the conversation. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so to STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Dave, as you and I were speaking just during that break here, I watched my daughter play a lot of soccer, and I enjoyed watching the game. It's a fun game to watch. But there's a lot about it that I didn't understand, and I suspect that is a problem that could inhibit growth. For instance, the offsides rule. I know what it is in theory, but I never saw it when it was happening. I mean, is that a problem, that kind of thing?
I think it certainly is, but if you're a European coming to America and trying to understand baseball, it's the same situation, or American football. You know, every sport has its unique rules, but soccer only has 17 rules, so it's a pretty simple sport. I mean, you need a ball and a field, and that's basically it, and that's one of the reasons why it's very popular.
I'm still trying to teach my wife the infield fly rule
in
baseball. There are some complications there. In looking back over the history, and its long history, taking us back to the 19th century, 1875, I think, is your starting point, isn't it?
Yes.
Why is that the starting point for you?
It was the earliest mention I could find in a St. Louis newspaper that there had been a game played in St. Louis. And there may be ones earlier than that, but the searchable database for the Globe Democrat and the Post-Dispatch only goes back to 1875. Hmm. So if you sat down with the microfilm and went through it all, I'm sure you could probably find a game earlier than that. But it's so embedded into the fabric of this city for such a long time. That's why St. Louis is such a natural to put a Major League Soccer franchise in.
Did it reach a peak at any particular point?
It really peaked from the period from probably from about 1915 up until – I mean, it's always been popular here, but as far as national dominance, we peaked probably in the period from the 1950s to the 1970s, starting in 1950 when five guys from St. Louis were in the starting 11 for the World Cup team that beat England 1-0. St. Louis U won 10 national championships. It's still – they still won more national soccer championships than any other men's program in the United States. UMSL's won national championships. SIU Eversville, Florissant Valley, Merrimack, Lewis and Clark. I mean, you name it. It goes on and on and on.
There are, I think the figure is correct, 29 St. Louisans are members of the
– 29 native, St. Louisans who are in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. And it just continues right now because we have players like Lori Kolupny and Becky Sauerbrunn who are on the U.S. World Championship team. Becky now is a captain of the U.S. Women's National Team, the co-captain. We have guys like Tim Ream who play in England from St. Louis. He's the only St. Louisan who's ever played in the English Premier League. So we're still producing these high-quality players.
Well, Lori Kolupny is considered, according to your book, one of the very best female players in the world.
Yes, absolutely. And Becky Sauerbrunn in the last few years has really come on strong. I mean, a lot of people thought she was the best player in the Women's World Cup.
Why is women's soccer, if it is, easier to watch than men's soccer?
I don't know if it's easier to watch, but I think it's so exciting because the U.S. dominates at the international level. The World Cup final, when Carly Lloyd scores from midfield, I mean, how can you not fall in love with that,
Yeah, it's almost like a women's golf in the sense that, you think you can play with the women because they don't swing as hard and that they drive the ball as far. Somehow, I watch golf and I say, I could never do what Tiger Woods and some of the others have done. But I think I could do what the women do.
Yes, and I think one of the things that appeals to people when they watch women's soccer, they play hard, but you don't see a lot of the players taking dives or doing, silly things that sometimes you see in the men's game where they're trying to draw a foul, and it's obvious that they're taking a dive. Sure. You don't see that in women's soccer.
Who's the best player to come out of St. Louis?
Oh, boy. You could start all the way back in the 1910s with a guy named Harry Radican, who played here, and he was such a good player in those days that teams on the East Coast wanted him, and he played for Bethlehem Steel, which was at that time the dominant men's team in the United States. He was a great player. Harry Keel certainly has to be in a conversation, who played on the 1950 team. He played for the Kutus team that won 6 U.S. Amateur Cups in a row. You'd have to talk about Pat McBride and Al Trost, two midfielders in the 60s and 70s who played professional soccer and who played in a limited role in the national team. In those days, the national team hardly ever got together and played. Since then, Tim Ream is an excellent player. Taylor Twellman, who played in Major League Soccer and was an MLS MVP in one season. And on the women's side, Lori Kolupny and Becky Sauerbrunn are two top players from St. Louis. There's a huge group of players to look at. Those are just some of the few of the names to think about.
Do you think that the best game that you could point your finger at would have been that 1950 World Cup 1-0 victory?
Absolutely. I mean, England was favored to win the World Cup, and the U.S. was rated 500-1 odds to win. And they come on the field against England and they score a goal late in the first half, and they hang on and win basically because the five St. Louis guys contributed a huge amount to that. Frank Borgi was the goalkeeper, made numerous saves. Harry Keogh was there. Charlie Colombo made a very controversial tackle near the end of the game that brought down a guy with a breakaway from Charlie's from the hill. So St. Louis played a huge role in that game, and that really shocked the world.
How did St. Louis itself react to that? Was there a big street party demonstration kind of thing going on?
There was no reaction at all. No reaction at all. First of all, you don't have, 24/7 communications like you have today, video and all that. Harry Keel said when he came back that morning, he got off the plane and went to play softball in Peoria in a tournament. So, I mean, they came back virtually still unknowns.
What do you think the current scandal, if I can use that word, and I guess it's appropriate with FIFA. What do you think that does to the game and does to its future?
Well, it's a sport where you're talking about huge sums of money involved. Anytime there's money to be had, you've got the potential for having issues like they're having in FIFA. I mean, when a country wants to win the bid to be the World Cup site, it's an extremely lucrative opportunity for that country. And so there's all kinds of temptations there. I think it's obviously very damaging to the sport, but it's something that it's not new. I mean, it's been going on for years and years and years.
With regard to the professional soccer in this country and the potential for here, FIFA's not involved with any of that at all.
Well, FIFA governs sport globally, so they are
professional and amateur.
Yes, they govern the sport at all levels throughout the world. And the U.S. Soccer Federation governs the sport in this country, but FIFA is the governing body for the entire world.
Well, I would have to think that might be a bit of a problem for the sport.
I think so, but I think in this country we kind of see ourselves as, you know, the rugged individualists, and maybe FIFA is the international body of the sport, but we're the United States, and the feeling I get is, you know, that's their business. We've got our own game, you know, whatever.
Another issue that you hear about from time to time is the issue of playing on turf as opposed to natural turf, or artificial turf as opposed to natural turf. What sort of an issue is that actually?
Well, I know from my own experience, I coached youth soccer for a long time, playing on grass and turf and watching those games. The ball just doesn't behave the same way. It bounces high, rolls a lot farther. And a couple of years ago, I talked to Abby Wambach about that, the all-time leading scorer in soccer internationally, men's and women's. And she said when it falls, it hurts. I mean, you get a burn, and yeah. She said it's just not a good surface to play on. Alex Morgan, I talked to her, and she blames it for a lot of her issues with her ankles. I mean, she had a lot of ankle injuries, and you know, she looks at artificial turf as the reason why.
Well, here again, you're mentioning names of the women players that I recognize, and I think most people recognize, but I'd be hard pressed to name a male star.
That's changing. I think a lot of people know who Messi is, who Ronaldo is, the game's biggest players right now. I mean, I see kids walking around with their jerseys all the time. It's changing. It's a generational divide. The 30 and under group, they're huge soccer fans.
But forgive me for making it seem like it's not important to me. I think it's certainly an important sport. It just seems to me that it's got a big hill to climb.
Yes, it does. But it's getting there. I mean, I think for the last 30 or 40 years, people have kept saying, "Oh, soccer's going to be the next big sport," and it hasn't. But I think it's on the verge of that right now.
We have a tweet here from Lisa who writes, "My high school female soccer kid says the reason you see less silliness from fem players is that we've got a lot of work to do." One final question before I have to say goodbye concerns indoor soccer. We've tried that a couple of times here with limited success. Your thoughts about that? Is that really soccer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I started covering indoor soccer when I was at the Globe Democrat, and they were selling out the old arena. If you watch the game, it's a game of 5-on-5 instead of 11-on-11, and you have boards. That's really the only difference. So there's a lot more action because you have a smaller space, fewer players. You see more of the skills of the player. I mean, I really enjoy watching indoor soccer just for that reason.
Well, we have to end it there, Dave Lang. I want to thank you so much for being with us and telling us a little bit about the history of the game and perhaps a little bit about the future as well. Thank you so much for being with us. I'll remind folks that Dave is the author of Soccer Made in St. Louis, A History of the Game in America's First Soccer Capital. And again, Dave Lang will be participating in a TEDx Gateway Arch event on Thursday, February 18th. Several panels that day discussing soccer will be held at Washington University. We have a link on our website at stopublicradio.org. Appreciate your being here, Jim.
Thank you.